Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Dennis O'Shea, welcome back to the conversation today.
John, thank you for having me on your show again.
It is a pleasure to be with you again. You're joining us from Tennessee. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. We met together maybe about 2 years ago or so to talk about how people use devices in the workplace. You have an updated study, now global, that we're going to unpack together today to look at and better understand how people work with their devices. As we get started, I wanted to share Dennis's bio with everybody. Dennis O'Shea founded Mobile Mentor in New Zealand in 2004. Since then, the company has helped millions of people unlock the full potential of their technology. In 2017, O'Shea moved to Nashville, Tennessee to launch the company's U.S. business with a focus on securing the mobile workforce in industries such as healthcare, education, finance, and government services. Wonderful background. Dennis, anything you would like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive on in?
Other than I've been a student of how people work and how they use their technologies for most of my life. So I'm very passionate about this area of understanding how people work.
Yeah, well, definitely me too. The why behind how people work and those drivers and dimensions is always fascinating to me. I have to admit, I'm less tuned into the technology side of it and like how people utilize the technologies within their work. But clearly that is reshaping a lot of the work that we do and how jobs are designed, not just the technological devices that we use, but even things like generative AI and large learning models and how those are being utilized within the technologies that we utilize. Of course, this is reshaping everything. So it's something we need to pay close attention to. Can I ask you, as we start off, like, why was this something that you really focused on as early as 2004, something that you wanted to spend, you know, the next 20 years of your life on?
The reason, I guess, was I spent the previous 15 years working for Nokia, and that was all about building technology and the cellular phones we were using back in the 90s and all of that. And I could see a problem, which was that the technology had got ahead of people and what people were doing. So I was very curious to see how can we solve this problem and enable people to get more value from the technology they're purchasing. Because it was clear that the amount of technology we had in our pockets with smartphones even 20 years ago was extraordinary. Most people were not using, you know, even a fraction of it. So that was the genesis for trying to figure out how do we unlock more productivity through the technology we've already purchased.
Excellent, excellent. So why don't we start with a general framing up of this most recent study. You can tell us a little bit more about how the study came to be, what the parameters are, like what the methodology is, and then we can start to unpack some of your findings.
Sure, sure. So I'll tell you what the burning question was. What we were trying to do is figure out how are people actually working in a post-pandemic hybrid work configuration? Because what we know now is hybrid work is here to stay, and all the data shows that it actually hasn't changed in the last 2 years. But what we wanted to see was how are people actually set up in their home offices? And this may sound a little bit creepy, but it's not. If you could imagine you're standing outside the window of somebody's home office and you're looking inside through the glass to see what's the setup on their desk and which of their devices are work devices and which are personal devices. And how is their work life and their personal life mashed up together? Because they are a mashup. And how are people managing all their passwords? And how much security is actually going on, and how much of their personal data is being mixed up with work data and vice versa. And we wanted to understand this balance between security, which is super important nowadays, you know, to not get hacked and ransomed, and then the employee experience and how well have people been set up to work productively in their home office. So that was really the frame of research to say, if you've got 100 or 1,000 employees or 10,000 employees, they're all going to be different. What does their configuration look like? And how on earth do you manage that? How do you empower all those people to be productive? And how do you keep them secure and keep your company secure? So that was kind of the frame of reference for the research.
Yeah, excellent. Well, definitely the security issue is something I know it's important. That's not my expertise. And so I'm not even really quite sure all the complexities there, other than I know it's complex and it's a huge, huge issue. Because of the way work has been redesigned, people want more flexibility, whether they're hybrid or remote, or mostly even at the office. Like I'm in my work office right now. And as you were talking about like personal devices versus work devices and how data gets mixed up and stuff, I'm like, it's not just even those who are at home or working hybrid. Like I'm at my office and I have work devices, personal devices side by side,
There you go.
you know, like it all meshes, right? And and that's just the reality that we're in. So trying to better understand that and do it in a safe way, you know, is a really important thing. Okay, tell us more about the methodology of this study.
Methodology was 2,400 people that we interviewed. The bulk of them were in the USA, I think 1,400, and then about 500 in Australia and 500 in the UK. So we wanted to get some geo spread, and we were focused primarily on knowledge workers, people who work on a computer most of the day. And then we focused on four highly regulated industries that really should have their house in order when it comes to security and some kind of division of work data from personal data. And so they were healthcare, finance, education, and government. So they're the industries we dived into to understand, you know, how are they set up? And to your point before, one of the key things we found is that this balance of security and experience is not in a great place. And what we found is that most people feel like security is getting in their way. And that's driving what's known as shadow IT. So people are working around their security policies. And there was really strong evidence in the data where people in the US, for example, 52% of people said, I feel like our security policies are hindering me. And so then 51% of people admit to finding ways to work around them. And then something like 53% of people said, I think I could be more productive with Dropbox and Gmail than the tools given to me by my employer. And that's a disaster, right? Because the companies obviously spend a lot of money buying the right tools, say from Microsoft or whatever, and setting them up and securing them. And if the employee then feels they could actually be more productive with Gmail and Dropbox, that means we've not got the balance right.
And I'm thinking of my university. That's definitely been a struggle. So the pandemic really kind of accelerated the adoption of kind of holistic tools across the university that everyone was going to use. Before it was really patchwork, and we had all people using all sorts of different things, and the university had a system, but not a lot of people used it anyway. So they put a ton of effort, in part because of cybersecurity concerns, but in part just because of the financial commitment that the organization was making towards these tools that weren't being heavily utilized. And there's a bit of a learning curve. It takes time for people to get comfortable using maybe tools they didn't always use before. And so that's been part of a process. Something else that I've noticed from the security standpoint is you have this dual authentication for everything, which is really good and really important. But I found just in recent years, it's gotten so much better. Like I don't know how to quantify it or how to put an amount of time to it, but it was 100% a pain point for me personally, you know, in fairly recent years, the number of times, every time I would log into a new device, the number of applications, every time, dual authentication. And then sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. For some reason, you'd have to do it again. Like super frustrating. Yeah. And that's gotten way better. So I will say, at least at my institution, that's gotten way better. So that's good. So it makes me much more inclined to do it rather than the shadow IT, like you said, and trying to find workarounds or other ways that I'm not getting slogged down. So that's really interesting that those were some key findings in this study.
Yeah, and I can tell you that education is they're the champions when it comes to shadow IT. Education organizations, and particularly universities, they've got the least restrictive security environment and the most permissive environment. So people can generally spin up new cloud applications and sign up to new services quite freely in a university setting in a way they cannot if you work for a finance company or a government department. So
Sure.
education is a big outlier in a number of areas of the data we collected. One of those you'll be interested in is the use of personal devices. So, you know, BYOD, bring your own device. That's been a known problem in industry for about 15 years. But we always perceived it to be a problem related to our smartphones, using smartphones with email, company email and the work email. Now it's become a laptop problem. So in the US, 69% of people are using their personal laptop for more than an hour of work per day. And if you're in security, you're probably thinking, how on earth is that possible? You know, we haven't enabled or set up the personal laptop to do work. Well, I guess people are forwarding stuff to their Gmail account on their MacBook and working on that at different times of the day. And so there's a whole bunch of behaviors going on that, you know, we didn't expect around the use of personal devices for work. And then the other one that's related to that is what we call password hygiene, what people are doing with their passwords. And there's some crazy stuff going on there when you really get into it and understand how people are tracking and managing all their different passwords across their work life and their personal life. You know, we give people 8 options to choose from and how they manage their passwords. And the very sad thing is that the percentage of people who are now putting their work passwords on notes on their personal phone has gone up dramatically in the last 2 years since we last spoke in 2022. And the percentage of people using a proper online secure password management tool has dropped. So we got more people doing the wrong thing and fewer people doing the right thing when it comes to password management. And passwords, as you probably know, are the number one reason for hacks and ransoms. You know, compromised credentials, number one reason organizations and people get hacked and compromised. So
I'm curious, some of these password, like Google Password Manager or some of these types of solutions to manage your passwords, how good are those in terms of security versus, you know, how much should we try to avoid those types of tools?
Look, they are better than putting notes on your phone or on a personal notebook, for sure. But if you're referring to saving passwords in your web browser, that's not super secure because it's not encrypted. So there are ways for somebody to fish your passwords out of your web browser if they hack the browser. The most secure, of course, is getting rid of passwords. So we're huge advocates for going passwordless and relying on the technology where we've got, you know, biometrics, recognize our faces or our fingerprints, Face ID, Touch ID, Windows Hello, and then two-factor authentication. So we just get away from this nightmare of managing passwords. Because, you know, they were a great invention back in 1961. Now in 2024, they're a nightmare. They're the reason, you know, organizations are getting hacked. So the best thing we can do is get rid of passwords. But if we need to keep them for a while as we modernize our technology, then tools like LastPass and 1Pass and all those, they're better than a notebook or an app on your phone.
Yeah. Excellent. So at least I know, because I will admit I'm a proud user of a Google Password Manager, but I need to be more careful with that. And I do really appreciate dual authentication on everything. And I appreciate, you know, fingerprints and retinal scans and like various tools that are much more common and available now across the board. I definitely feel more secure, even though I'm probably way more exposed from a data standpoint today than I've ever been in my life. And we probably all are.
Yeah.
Very good. So what do you see as like some of the best ways organizations can try to tackle some of these behaviors that you've identified in the study that may not be the best in terms of security, the health of the organization, and even the productivity of workers?
Yeah, well, there's some things we can do with technology, but and we leave that to the IT department. There are things we can do with people as well, which are probably equally important. And what we found in the study was that people care a lot about their personal privacy. They don't care very much about their company security. So when we ask the question, what do you care most about, your company security, your company's data or your personal data? It's like 75 to 25. People care about personal data way more than the company data. Now, when we split that by generation, it gets super interesting. Gen Z that came into the workforce around the time we spoke back in 2022, they were coming into their first jobs. They have a very casual approach to company security, but also to their personal data, which is really interesting. The older generations, the older millennials and the baby boomers, they care a lot more about company security and their personal data. But one of the key things we've learned from this study is that that young generation, Gen Z, have that casual attitude and approach to personal data, and they bring that to work, and they've got a very casual approach to their organization's data security. And we think, and this, let me frame this as a question to you. Do you think this is because of the fact that Gen Z have already given away so much of their personal data to the social media networks? You know, essentially, they've said to the social networks, you can know my location, you can know my entire social graph, all the people I connect with, all the things I like and watch and comment on. You can see what I buy and what I listen to. You know, is it because they've given it all away that they don't see a lot of value in protecting their private data in the way that older generations might consider that sacrosanct?
I mean, this isn't something I've studied specifically, but I would guess that would be an important part of this. I think also generally, we just know that younger millennials and Gen Z individuals, both in a higher education setting, in the workforce, they're fairly cynical and distrustful of institutions. So I think, you know, if you're in a world where you see like a lot of the systems of society kind of set up in a way that isn't to your benefit, you feel like you're disadvantaged, you feel like you don't have a lot of trust in the government or in corporations, or you know, all any institution really. If that's your mindset and how you approach the world, I can get it. I understand, you know, how those individuals may just not be so inclined to care, or think it's important, or think it's their problem to worry about.
You know, it's interesting you raised that because one of the questions we asked in the research was to understand how people felt about their company's efforts to protect their data, their employee data. And in America in particular, we found a high degree of cynicism, much more than Australia and the UK. Very high degree of cynicism that people felt like, I'm not really sure my organization cares that much about my data. So it works both ways because we want the employee to protect company data. But if the employee doesn't feel like the company is doing everything they could, then we have a bit of a breakdown. But you know, you asked me about things we can do better. And one of the things we learned is that because people care so much more about their personal data than their company data, we think a key thing employers can do is reframe messaging with a privacy lens. So instead of talking about security in a traditional way where we bang on about policies and security and compliance and audits and risk and all those things, they're very boring words. And people will generally tend to turn off and disengage and tune out. But if we reframe it as one about privacy, we get their attention. And what I mean by that is, you know, if we're talking to you as an employee and we say, hey, John, this company has information about your salary. We know your home address. We've got your HR records. We may have some of your healthcare records. We want to protect you and your data. And same for your colleagues and all our colleagues, all our employees. So help us to help you. And we need to protect all our data. That gets your attention in a different way to talking about audits and compliance and risk and those words. So we think simply reframing the message as well as privacy to get to the heart of the employee is a good first step.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it really is like a level of mutual accountability and trust that needs to be developed. There's an interesting Harvard Business Review article out recently, maybe in the last month or so, about employee surveillance, and the impact of employee surveillance on those types of attitudes around data security and overall employee morale and productivity and such. And so, you know, certainly organizations have the right, they have the responsibility to make sure their data is secure. They have the right to monitor employees. I don't have any right to privacy, you know, when I'm at the office doing stuff with my work devices and whatnot, or at least that's what I consistently hear. But the challenge is like if people don't feel if they feel like they're being surveilled, if they don't feel like that their privacy is held in check, and if they don't feel like their data is secure, it just it makes sense to me why people would be cynical and why people would be less inclined to care about the institution. Like, they're like, kind of screw them. Like, they're, if they're surveilling me, why do I care so much about like small little data breaches or whatever?
Yeah, it works both ways. And one of the other things we found is that people are feeling more and more isolated. So, you know, hybrid work's been around for a few years now. People are settling into it. But what's happening is people are meeting their colleagues less than ever before. And it's become quite acute in the US because it's a huge geography. So we asked people, how often do you meet your work colleagues? And the percentage of people that only meet work colleagues once or twice a year is extraordinarily high. And the percentage of people who meet their colleagues five or more times a year is really low compared to the UK and even Australia, that are similar geographic size in Australia, but people are more concentrated in the East Coast. So there's more contact. But what we're detecting from the research is that people are feeling isolated. You know, there's a whole generation of people sitting at home on their own. Like we talk, we look in the window and see their devices. They experience their entire work life through those devices, through those screens.
Yeah.
That's their view of their boss and their colleagues. That's how they experience their company culture, through these screens, not meeting people in person as much as in the past. And so we asked a really critical set of questions. We asked them to force rank five things, and those things were personal well-being, job satisfaction, ability to work remotely, company culture, and pay and benefits. And it was unbelievable the answers we got. Personal well-being, number one, a massive number one above all else. People are in their own bubble in their home. They care about me, me, me. And last was company culture. Actually, the second last and last. So because people are now disconnected and working remotely and just experiencing culture through these two or three screens on the desk, company culture has gone way down in people's priorities. And it's all about me, my personal well-being. We did not expect that.
Super interesting. And that's just part of the reality of this new world of work that we find ourselves in. There's a lot just from that we could unpack and discuss.
Yeah.
Dennis, I note the time. I need to let you go here in just a minute. Before we wrap things up for today, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, your team, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
Sure. So best way to contact me is dennis.arshay@mobile-mentor.com. I'm on LinkedIn. And our company is all about helping organizations make hybrid work work. We know there are challenges at hybrid work, and the research shows that clearly. Mm-hmm. There are challenges of productivity and getting the right balance with security. We specialize in making hybrid work work in a secure, sustainable way so people can be productive on all their devices, wherever they work. So that's what we're passionate about doing, making hybrid work work.
I love it. Dennis, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Dennis and his team can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.